The following podcast is edited from the live Voices of Montana program, Montana's original statewide radio talk show that's heard Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. The show has been airing for more than 20 years, and it wouldn't be possible without our local radio affiliates. Contact your local radio station if you'd like to hear the program live in your area, and it's currently not available. The show is also streamed live on voicesofmontana.com.
The fastest hour in radio starts now.
Oh, yeah, calling it a day, meaning hanging up the spurs, or hanging up the shield, or hanging up the pickaxe, or whatever it is. What am I talking about? Two well-known Montanans have made it known that they're going to be retiring this month. The timber industry had the good fortune of having Chuck Rohde as an advocate and a steward for 40 years. The public and law enforcement, they've had the good fortune of having Custer County Sheriff Tony Harbaugh keeping the pace, and keeping the pace too, a big guy for over 40 years. Today, we're going to say thanks, look back, challenges and achievements on Voices of Montana. Tom Schultz alongside, thank you for being here. 22 years, that's two decades strong, working on three, and just appreciate you making us a part of your Montana mornings for that objective perspective. All right, I just got word. Now, a bit later on in the program, we were going to have Tony Harbaugh on. Had him on about a year ago, and it's a great conversation. A lot of things to cover when we talk about 40-plus years in law enforcement, especially in eastern Montana. He is on a call this morning with Governor-elect Greg Gianforte, as the governor-elect has tabbed Tony to do some preliminary work, but... So on that call, I just got a message from Tony saying they've kind of added to the agenda today, may not be able to come on later on. So we're going to just right up front reschedule Tony Harbaugh for Monday. That gives us plenty of time to welcome Chuck Rohde, Vice President and General Manager of F.H. Stoltz Land and Lumber Company in Columbia Falls, who announced recently that he is going to be hanging up. Is it a pickaxe, Chuck, or what is it you're exactly hanging up?
I'd say it could be hanging up your saw, yeah. Hanging up your axe, or hanging up your sawmill spurs.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for all those years of advocating for Montana's timber industry, and congratulations on your retirement. I know if congratulations is the right word, it can be bittersweet at times, though, can it? Because you're moving off from one thing and into another.
Yeah, that's true, Tom. I'm retiring from the industry, but I'm still going to be practicing my forestry on my own timberlands. That's what I like to do for my recreation and my stress release. So I'm not going anywhere, but just changing my where I'm going to practice and put my focus.
Yeah, and I'm happy for it. I'm happy that you have that as well, whether you had forest land or even a patch, whatever it was, of grassland. I'm sure you'd be practicing good stewardship over that. Let's just start off by, I know how hard it is. I mean, you kind of look back at some things, but you sort of put those things in perspective when you talk about challenges and achievements in 45 years of the timber industry. What comes to mind for you on the challenges side?
Well, I've always been in the part of the timber industry, that depends on federal lands for supplying wood to the all the milling infrastructure that I've been responsible for. And that, from when I first started as a young forester, that was not quite as hard as it has become over the course of my career. We went through a pretty major time in our social environment, so to speak, that we kind of quit managing and actively managing our federal lands. And we did a real good job of putting out fires and being smoky bear and focusing on that, but we didn't follow it up with management. And from about the late 80s through to just a few years ago, there was a huge void when we didn't actively manage our lands. And that's been a real challenge to me in when I'm responsible for wood products, infrastructure and industry and sawmills that need wood. That's tough. And so I've had to become more actively involved than most foresters would like to become. It's just been a real challenge, tough.
There's land management, and stewardship. When you're out there actively on the land and investigating what it needs here and putting measures into place there. And then there's the whole politics behind the timber industry and the environmental industry. And I think as you have seen over 45 years in your industry, the environmental movement really grow. It's done some good things, but lately and maybe for a long time now, I think their agenda is different in terms of they want to have crises so that they can raise funds off of that. And it's become sort of a self-sustaining industry in that regard, as long as they can say there's problems in the forest. And some of those problems they've created themselves, would you say?
Yeah, you know, I would start off, and I get asked this a lot. There are a lot of very good conservation organizations out there and yeah. with very good intentions, and they want to help the resources and the wildlife. And at the same time, there's some real, I refer to them as extremist environmental groups that they want to control, and they're pretty darn good at it. They want to raise funds from their donors and through litigation and being successful in their litigation. I really think that becomes more their mission than really having any sincere care for the wildlife or the resources or whatever it is they're litigating. And it's a very selfish attitude in the big picture, and it's just really makes things tough. And society as a whole doesn't benefit from that. I mean, very seldom does a wildlife species or our natural resources or tree stands or society as a general benefit from all this litigation by these extremist groups. But not all groups are in that category,
yeah.
But it makes it really frustrating for somebody that wants to see the land and the wildlife taken care of. Just very frustrating, and we don't have a day goes by you don't read of somebody litigating something, and it's generally on process. The Forest Service or the BLM didn't do this, or they didn't follow the process. Well, they're not trying. Those agencies aren't trying to break the law or do anything wrong. Just because they didn't cross a T or dot an I doesn't mean there's anything they're trying to not do right. And so it's very frustrating.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I feel frustrated. I know a lot of the public feels frustrated as well. Even some environmental organizations, like you rightly said, there are those who look at their mission and want to accomplish their mission. And then there are others who have adjusted their mission, so to speak, and as you had referred to. But there's some awareness over that. Even the environmental community that's not on the extreme side is putting pressure on those extreme environmentalists because we're witnessing the effect of improper forest management. Do you see maybe a breakthrough or a continuation of that? Do you see that pressure from the inside of the environmental industry making any kind of difference in those who would wish to continue the crisis management?
I have seen an improvement, and we've seen a lot in this collaborative effort that there are a lot of really valid, conscientious conservation groups, and they're not necessarily proud of these extremist groups, and they don't defend them. And so, yes, I think there has been. And I've developed a lot of friendships and relationships with a lot of those groups. Sometimes we can be the greatest allies against these extremists. And so, yeah, I think there's been great strides made. We still got a long ways to go.
Yeah.
I'm just a real advocate that we need to be good stewards of our lands, and litigation doesn't get us there. And it's a selfish thing for a lot of these groups, and it really bothers me.
And in being good stewards, I think over the years, and especially as you look back at four decades of public service in that industry, there have been some scientific discoveries. There have been some new methods. Talk about the changes in that regard that over the years have made us better stewards over our land.
Oh my gosh, the technology that we've seen in it's just incredible. And in even in the logging industry, the machinery we've seen is so much easier on the land. It's safer for the operators. It's more efficient. It's incredible. And we've seen the same thing in the transportation industry. We've seen the same thing in our milling infrastructure. I mean, the milling now is not only just safer and more productive, but it's more efficient. We squeeze more blood out of the turnip and the logs that we do get and the timber that we do get. But in the end, what that makes is a better job done out on the land. The problem we have, even though we have this technology, we've got to be treating more acres. We're really behind. We just need to treat a lot of the land. And like I said, we did a great job of being Smokey Bear, but we didn't follow up on it. And now we're all really paying the price on that.
Yeah, Yeah, reaping
these
that.
Fires are, they're scary. They're huge. And we're such a small fragment of the population that has to deal with it. So it's pretty incumbent on us, those of the live have to live with that and see those consequences, to try to convince the rest of the country, hey, we need to do something here.
And there has been movement in Congress in that regard. As you look at Steve Daines and Dianne Feinstein, Steve, of course, a senator from Montana, Feinstein, the Democratic senator, quite liberal, from California, have come together with a forest management package. And that is unique in itself, that those two would work together. As we have talked with Senator Daines, he has talked about how hard it was, or at least the process in coming together on these two sides, so to speak, to put one bill forward. But are you encouraged by at least that? And does that bill have a chance in Congress where it seems like the will changes quite frequently?
Yes, I am encouraged. And yes, I think there's still a chance. I really admire Senator Daines. He gets it. That's what I've always said. He understands it. He wants to do what's right. And Dianne Feinstein is the same way. Senator Feinstein says, man, my people have choked down enough smoke. I mean, it's terrible what's happened in California. I wouldn't wish that anywhere. That's just, it's terrible. It's taken lives and homes. It's burned down to their vineyards. But it's waking up a lot of people that, hey, we got to do something here. And I do think it has room. It's really hard. You mentioned the politics. Trying to convince people east of the mountains and east of the Mississippi that we had a problem, they don't see it other than the 6 o'clock news. So it's a tough political thing to wrangle, and it takes a lot of time to try to convince people, hey, we got to do something. But Daines and Feinstein are all over it, and I really hand it to him. He has put a lot of time and effort and his staff into trying to do what's right.
Steward, advocate, lifelong, really. Chuck Brody is with us, who's the general manager and president of F.H. Stoltz Land and Lumber Company in Columbia Falls, a graduate of the University of Idaho's College of Forestry way back in 1975, and has made a career of I would say, serving the public. I mean, this is a very important resource industry for Montana, and it's seen its challenges, that's for sure, and yet still surviving. Chuck, again, I appreciate you being here, and congratulations. I'm looking forward. I don't know. I suppose there are people leaning on you already to say, hey, Chuck, now that you're retiring, why don't you come over here and do this for us?
Yes, I get a lot of comments, but that's all in good, and I sort through some of it, but mainly I want to take some time to play in my own forest lands and spend a little more time with my grandkids.
Yeah.
That's pretty important.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. What do you – well, let's go down that road a little bit. How many grandkids you got?
I have 4 grandchildren, two granddaughters and 2 grandsons, and – to brag on them a bit, they know their tree species and their animal species, and they know how to track animals, and they're all good hikers, and so I'm pretty proud of them for their outdoors background, and they got great parents.
I'm glad to hear that, it's retirement. I want you to have a long and happy and healthy retirement, and it sounds like you're looking forward to that, too. Let's go back to 1975. You got out of college, and then you, what did you decide? How did you get into the timber industry, so to speak, and then take us from there to, you know, where you are here in the Columbia Falls area?
Well, I got to where I am and went to school in forestry because I wanted to. I thought for a while I had this big ambitions. I was going to be an outfitter and a guide and be able to, but reality kind of sunk in, and I thought, that's not going to fly real good and and make a good living. So I went to college to be a forester, and that's, I haven't regretted it one day since. And I started with a company called the Pack River Company, which is a somewhat similar to Stoltz today. They were family-owned by the Brown family in North Idaho, and the name changed a few times, and the company bought and sold. And then in 2002, the company sold to a timber investment firm, and they didn't keep any of the management. And I came to Stoltz then, and it's just been, to me, like old home week. They're also a privately held, or the oldest family-owned forest products company in Montana. They are super advocate, good stewards of the land. The family has always been extremely supportive of that since day one. Their lands are open to the public, and which brings on a whole other subject and troubles, but they've always been very strong community members and members of the state of Montana, and they have a lot of pride in that.
Yeah, and they have weathered some storms as well. As we look at the challenges that have faced the timber industry, a lot of mills in your time have shut down since then. Can you look at the future of the timber industry in, let's just say, the Pacific Northwest, or you could go across the U.S. if you want, versus what's going on in Canada over the next 20 years, and have any kind of sense of where it might be going?
You know, I'm very optimistic, Tom. We have went through some pretty tough times, and a lot of mills have fell to the wayside, and it's very sad. I mean, Stoltz included. We had mills in Darby and Dillon, Montana. We had an Aspen mill in Utah, but they were all dependent on federal land, timber, and they quit managing the land, so did those mills, and that affects a lot of people's lives. But right now I see us going in the other direction. Let's hope that continues into the next administration, but there is a tremendous increase in demand for wood right now. There's a lot of pent-up demand, their housing increases, but I also see that as a huge opportunity for our industry to manage and treat more acres of our forest. I mean, we have this demand, we have such a huge need to treat the forest. We are so behind on doing that. And so I look at it as a great opportunity to even be better stewards of the land. And I just hope we take advantage of that. And not just federal. The private tree farmers, the timber industry, the federal lands, tribal lands, the school trust. It's a great opportunity with the values and demand we have. So let's treat those acres and let's get on with our stewardship.
Yeah, and I understand, as you had kind of alluded to earlier, that this year we may have been able to harvest more board feet out of our forests than before. The resource industries have always been vital to Montana's economy. They've taken a bit of a back step over the years to service and recreation. I'm not sure that that's going to be a good thing, but our resources industry, very, very important. Timber industry, a topic today, as Chuck Rohde, who's been 45 years in that industry with various companies, currently with Stoltz Land and Lumber Company in Columbia Falls, retiring here recently, and again, best of luck to you. Appreciate all the service. Chuck, let's talk about this land development here and the pressures, because I know it happened. Was a Plum Creek that just sold a bunch of timber up there to, which is pretty much a development company, as I understand, as you peel back the pages here. What kind of pressures has the development put on our timber industry in Montana?
The bigger view of that is every acre we take out of production of growing trees or being able to have the elk and the deer travel through it and ends up with a house on it, and that takes land away from that other use. So I view it, you know, and I admittedly I'm pretty selfish to being a person that would, you know, likes not having close neighbors and would like to keep it all to ourselves. That's not real practical, and we're getting a huge influx of people into Montana and all over in the West, Idaho, Oregon, Washington, Wyoming as well. But it takes land out of production, so it puts more pressure on those remaining and existing acres, whether you're growing trees or you're growing a farm crop of some kind. Every time you build a housing development and it takes 160 acres or 40 acres out, that puts more pressure on the rest of that. So that's my view of it, and it certainly see it in our industry. And so the more times that, you know, it just puts a lot of pressure on it. And so I'm there again. It can come across as pretty selfish. Everybody wants their little piece of the world, but as our population grows, it puts a lot of pressure on those resources, and even more reason we need to be taking care of what we got and managing the forest.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 1-866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana, with Tom Schultz.
Hanging up his saw, as he would say. Chuck Rohde is with us, Stoltz manager. That's F.H. Stoltz Land and Lumber Company, Columbia Falls, and a 45-year advocate for stewardship in our timber industry. Chuck, again, appreciate your time. I just have to make a clarification. As I mentioned earlier, that Sheriff Tony Harbaugh was scheduled to be with us. It was going to be kind of cool. Two people who are well-known, have served Montana well, and are kind of calling into career at the end of this year. Tony had some duties today that got expanded, so we'll reschedule him for Monday. And Chuck, I appreciate you hanging on here too, because there's really a few more things that I'd like to kind of talk about. And as we talked about the Good Neighbor Authority, maybe you can explain what that is for people who might not know how it came about. I think most of that came out not necessarily in a forest management bill, but in the latest farm bill. Some of those tools that you didn't exactly have before are now in your toolbox, so to speak. Will it sustain or stabilize the timber industry?
So to put it in perspective, the Good Neighbor Authority, or GNA as we refer to it, is just one tool in the toolbox. It came out of the Farm Bill, and it's a good tool. And more of the states are picking it up. So what it is that tool allows the states to administer and put up. They use a state contract on federal timberland forests. So if the bottom line is we treat more acres and we accomplish getting more of the land taken care of, then yes, it's a great tool. And it has so far. Some of the states are taking more advantage of it than others, and it's I really appreciate what they're doing in Montana, but it's just one of those tools. There's all kinds of tools that we've tried over the years to stewardship agreements, lots of those different things, and they're all working and they're all part of it. I just remind everybody, one tool in the toolbox, we still got a long ways to go. We need to be treating 20 times the number of acres in the national forest that we do right now.
And the whole industry has kind of gone from, well, I don't know your opinion on this, we used to timber logging projects to now forest treatment projects. Will that sustain as needed as it is, will that help sustain the timber industry?
I think it helps. And there again, rather than to try to have something just to sustain or stabilize the industry, if we treat those lands and we go into it for the right reasons to be good stewards, we need the forest products industry. We have to have that infrastructure, whether it's the logging community, the trucking, the transportation, the sawmilling, the pulp mills. You need all that infrastructure. They'll stabilize if we treat the land. And it'll also help meet our demand that we've seen right now for the housing industry. So it goes hand in hand. We don't have to do something just to sustain the industry or stuff. It'll happen if we treat the land.
Good point. I appreciate that. What about the dynamic here, as we kind of hit on a little bit? I don't know if you guys have thoughts as an industry on the Interior Secretary nominee from New Mexico, Deb Haaland. But we now have, or will have soon, a Republican governor in the state of Montana, and likely to have a Democratic administration. What are your thoughts on that juxtaposition?
Oh, Tom,
I know.
The whole politics thing is touchy, and
they are.
As far as the nominees, I think it's a bit premature for me to speculate. You know, I don't know Congresswoman Haaland from New Mexico. It's just too premature yet.
Okay.
I have always been an advocate of those cabinet members need to be experienced and experts in the department they're taking over, not just to fill a political niche. So I'll leave it at that. As far as the governor-elect, Gianforte, I just really appreciate him, and I've gotten to know him better and better, and I can totally understand why Tony's probably consumed today. But Greg is extremely smart. He thinks ahead, and I really appreciate how his professional business approach to things. And yet, at the same time, he's a very caring person. I can't tell you enough, and I know he's going to try everything he can on the natural resources. In the conversations I've had with him, it's going to be an uphill battle with probably with the way our federal government has went. But I think he's going to try pretty darn hard, and I'm going to do everything I can to help him.
Yeah, I bet he's probably called, and I don't doubt that he's going to lean on your expertise in the future. Any final thoughts here? I know it's hard to do that, and sometimes these long goodbyes are a little awkward, and I know that you're looking forward to the time that you're going to have forward. But looking back, are there stories, are there people, particular moments that come to mind that sort of define those four decades for you?
You know, when people ask me the highlight of my career, I have to say it's the people that I've met and interacted with and worked, and not just in our industry. Our industry is a pretty tight-knit industry, and we're all pretty connected at the hip. And a lot of my colleagues have heard me say that before, but I mean, we need the pulp mills, we need the sawmills, we need the loggers, we need the trucking community, we need the insurance folks, we need the fuel. It's tight-knit, but the other part of that is, and it is both a challenge and rewarding, is the people I've met in you know, I always hate to refer to it as collaboratives, but the people that we've worked to, and I just recently spent time on the governor's grizzly bear committee, they're very sincere, great intention people, and so I like working with them, and every time I get the opportunity to share my feelings about how we should be good stewards of the land and that our water and our wildlife and taking care of that is not mutually exclusive from the forest, and neither is recreation. We can have our cake and eat it too, and we will make mistakes, but that's the most rewarding part of me is meeting the people and trying to get other people that aren't even near our realm or in some other business or industry or don't live with this in this area and get them to recognize and understand need why we need to actively manage our land. So that sounds a little.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah,
I really mean that.
Yeah,
I'm very sincere about it.
Yeah, and you can tell when people are genuine in their interests and in their beliefs. And even though you may disagree with them, or there may be disagreements about it, if you focus on the end goal, you'll find more to agree. Here's a text message, Chuck, and I know who this comes from. Guy, you probably know it too. Starts his first name is Taylor. How about the need for a new forestry building at UM? We checked in a while back with the legislative agenda for higher education, and that is on it. What do you think about that?
Yes, we do need one, and we talked about it within our industry with the leaders at the college, and but it's a tough time too right now. Oh man, this whole coronavirus has added a whole new twist to it, but I think we'll get there. The people in Montana are pretty innovative thinkers. We'll come up with ways, and we always have, of ways to generate funds, and I think it'll happen. It may take a little longer than we want, but yeah, I think it'll happen.
Well, thank you so much for your service and just being that steward among Montana's best stewards when it comes to our public lands and the timber industry, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate your time here as well. And, you know, Chuck, I got your phone number. And now that you're not working for F.H. Stoltz, I may call you, and you may feel a little more freer to talk with some opinions out there. Not that you haven't been. We'll see how that develops too, Chuck. Really, really do appreciate the work you've done. Congratulations to you.
Thank you, and thanks for your time, Tom.